I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
We welcome you back. The second half of the program is here, and we've got some news for you. Breaking news from Omaha. The Gators have punched a ticket to the College World Series finals with a narrow but significant victory over TCU. Florida wins 3-2. And they will wait and find out whether it's Wake or LSU. They play tonight. If LSU wins, they'll play again tomorrow. If Wake wins, it will be, Wake in Florida for the College World Series. Number one and two teams in the country if it ends up like that. Let's get back to the calls here. And John is up next in Atlanta. Hello, John.
Hey, Paul. John Ossoff, Senator over here. Was on our local news with an appearance with, I think, Scalise and Tuberville. They were talking about amateur sports. And it's caused a lot of conversation online with the message boards about sometimes the solution to a complex problem is the simplest solution. And, and they were talking about redefining of the amateur athlete. And it was suggested that before the end of 2023, you would see that. And people have wondered, what does that mean? And the thought process, I want to see what your thoughts were here, was that, amateur athletes would be allowed to make up to a certain amount, just like young people are today before it's taxed. You know, there's laws that are in place that says you can make up to a certain amount before you pay any taxes. And there would be a law that would actually define what an amateur athlete really is. And then each program would be allowed only so many non-amateur athletes, which would create parity. And I think the comment that was made at the end of that segment was, sometimes when the pendulum swings out far, it comes back far. There might be more control. So, I kind of have thought about that, and some of our friends have talked about it throughout the day today. And I like the idea of, if an amateur athlete is allowed to make up to a few hundred thousand dollars a year and still be considered an amateur athlete, then you're not limiting their income earning potential, because that would be a violation of law. However, they could make more if they wanted to. They just wouldn't be an amateur anymore, and they would have to turn pro. And under the guidelines that there are right now, we all know that they would have to wait till their junior year. In some sports, that's different, like basketball. But I thought that was a simple solution to a problem that would avoid making them employees, would give them the chance for name, image, and likeness that would be very substantial, but would not allow programs that have the big money donors to be able to take over and start ruling college football just with money, because every team would fall under the guise of what an amateur athlete is defined to be, and only so many non-amateur athletes that you'd be able to have in your program. Just what are your thoughts on that?
John, I'm curious. I'm assuming the answer is yes. Was Ossoff in favor of this?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And I think they were kind of saying that, I can't remember the exact wording, but, the solution to the most complex issues is usually a simple one.
Yeah, I know Tuberville, I talked to him about it a year ago, was very much in favor of a cap. I think it's plausible. My only question isn't on the minutia. It's whether or not they can ever get it in front of a committee to get it through the House and over to the Senate. Yeah,
they were saying they were going to expect this before the end of 2023. Well, and the great thing about it was
I don't mean to challenge a senator's veracity. I sat in Tuberville's office a year ago, and he told me that he and Joe Manchin would have the bill passed by September of 22, and that was a year ago. So I do not believe that.
Right. Well, I think that I like the idea. Everybody seems to be worried about getting sued.
That's why the NCAA just passed the buck on this. They couldn't afford another lawsuit.
If you define what an amateur athlete really is, you're not saying you can't go out and make more, but if you go out and make more, you're not an amateur athlete. And then each program is only allowed so many of those, which creates parity again. So it's something similar to the NFL, but you're sidestepping the means at which you could be sued. So I liked it. I hope that they go in that direction.
I think it's one of the better proposals I've heard, but I'll find out a little bit more about it. Hey, thank you very much for the call. You need bipartisan support. Obviously, Ossoff is a Democrat. The other two are Republicans. But I still think there are some naysayers in Washington that would not agree to putting a cap on what someone could make. That to me is completely in favor of the coaches and the administration. I'm not sure what it does for the players, and I think they will be hurt if you push them too far. Phil is up next. Good afternoon. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Paul. Big fan of the show. Been listening for years. Wanted to get your thoughts on this with Coach Saban's comments coming out this week. I'm a lifelong Bama fan, live in Tuscaloosa County, grew up here. And we're 7 months after the end of the season, basically. And, you know, in the corporate world, when we have coaches, and I've had coaches and I've helped coach some people, there's people that take ownership for their shortcomings, and they come up with solutions to fix those shortcomings. And then we have people that make excuses, and it was this and it was that. I was not around when Bear Bryant was in his final years. It feels like, as a Bama fan, that we might be getting closer to the end. And the comments coming out this week, still talking about the playoff committee, and then you add in, I know this past season you were very vocal about, we got out-coached a couple games, 17 penalties against Tennessee, 15 penalties against Texas, outcoached by Sarkisian, outcoached by Jimbo, outcoached by Josh Heupel, wide receiver, you know, hitting a girl after a game, and the guy didn't even miss any time. So just wanted to get your thoughts, Paul. I was not around in Bear Bryant's final years, but I would like to hear your thoughts on where we are in this part of the dynasty and how it may or may not compare to
Bryant. I appreciate the question, and I was around for the final 2 years, but I feel comfortable in saying I was a fairly good student of the Bryant era. Knowing the people that were involved, having spoken to so many of them and having read everything available. And I can never find, nor have I ever been able to find a single incident where Paul Bryant made an excuse about anything. He took ownership in every loss, and he gave credit to his players in every win. I cannot imagine Paul Bryant ever saying what Nick Saban said the other day.
Yeah, it was shocking to me to hear that as an Alabama fan, just being honest with you. But I was thinking, if we would have got into that playoff last year, I really think, as a Bama fan, lifelong Bama fan, I mean, I've been drinking the Kool-Aid for years, I thought we could have gotten into the playoff and gotten destroyed potentially by Georgia. And what would that have done to Alabama in recruiting?
I think you're asking a great question. And for all of Saban's comments, in some ways, the best thing that happened to him was losing to LSU. And you ask me why? The answer is he didn't have to play Georgia in the championship game. And that would I firmly believe, had they beaten LSU, they would have lost to Georgia. Alabama was ascending at the end of the year, but they were not quite in Georgia's league. And they would have lost to Georgia either in Atlanta or in Atlanta, one of the two times that they would have played. And that would have hurt, right? I mean, the one thing that has fueled some Alabama fans is the fact that the two teams split in the previous season, which is silly to talk about, but because the game mm-hmm. that mattered was the national championship game, not the SEC game.
Yeah. I agree. Thank you so much, Paul. Thanks for what you
do. It's a phenomenal question, and it's never been asked before to me. And there are many, many similarities between Nick Saban and Paul W. Bryant. But I'll lean on anyone out there who played for Coach Bryant, who knew Coach Bryant, but I've never heard, nor have I ever read or heard about him making an excuse. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Jesse is up next in Panama City. Good afternoon, Jesse.
Hello, Paul. How you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Long-time listener, longest-time listener you've ever had.
Thank you.
I'm sure of that. Anyway, I want to touch on two points. Larry from Shelby being a persona, it ain't a persona. He's standing in line at the Dollar General right now with 2 15 packs of Bud Lights under his arm. And the other difference is, Paul, you know, or the other point I want to talk about is you know the difference in Saban and Bryant. And God, I love Coach Bryant. But you know the difference. And you say they're close, and they're not. They're not. Coach Saban's coach. They're both the same age when Coach Bryant passed away. Am I not right?
Well, yeah. 72? Coach Bryant was 69 when he
69.
Retired. And,
that's
and
right.
Saban will
that's
turn
right.
72 in October.
There you go. Well, God love Coach Bryant, but Coach Saban didn't smoke 2 packs of Chesterfield.
Well,
and drink 3 pints of vodka.
Now, Jesse, we're talking about a subject that we're not allowed to talk about, Coach Bryant's personal life.
Oh, are we not? Well, I'm sorry.
Coach Bryant really was, in dog years, was significantly older than 69.
He
didn't miss.
You know that. You covered him at the end.
He didn't miss a day of living life to its fullest.
Exactly. And the wild turkey flowed free, and that's all good.
No,
I'm a fan of day drinking the
I mean, I have heard a lot of crazy stories about Nick Saban from players and coaches and things where he would chew them out. I mean, all things that everybody has heard about. But the stories about Coach Bryant off the field, and I'm not being salacious. I'm just being some of them are legendary in terms of some of the places he went, the people with whom he was with. I mean, nobody's ever lived higher than he did.
Right. And it took his toll on him.
It did. I think his last couple of years where he still had a great program, he just ran out of gas.
He did. You're right. I was 18, 20 years old when it all went down. Bama fan since 69. We ain't going nowhere. Bama ain't going nowhere.
Well, if Bama could survive Mike Dubose,
the Mike
Shill, and
right.
Mike Price, it can survive.
The Mike years. Yeah.
It can survive finishing fifth in the country.
Yeah, so, yeah. Coach Saban ain't slowing down. And you're right, who he surrounds himself with is going to be the answer, and that was Coach Bryant's answer back in the day, if we remember that.
And really, Coach Bryant's last year or two, he started to lose a few coaches, and it did hurt him. And I think ultimately, my question about Coach Saban is very similar to the one that I would have asked had I had a voice back then, as opposed to being a young reporter. Coach Bryant was too loyal, and I think Saban was too loyal to his assistants. Now he finally made changes, and he finally got rid of Pete Golding, which he should have done 3 years ago. And I think you'll see a much better defense as a result.
I think the defense is going to be good, and I think the offensive line is going to be good. And I'm 60 years old. I could probably go down there and play quarterback and win nine games.
You could definitely you could probably win nine. Now the question is, can you get Alabama to the playoffs? That's my only doubt.
I'm still pretty fast.
Okay, well then you could probably do it. Hey, good to hear from you. This guy here could not get Alabama to the playoffs. Larry is next.
Hey, who?
You.
Hey, let me tell you, that guy said I disrespect you.
Yeah.
Man, let me tell you something, dude. Me and you roll like this, Paul. Do I disrespect you? Do you think that?
No. Larry, remember that guy you had to fight with? And, of course, that's probably a stupid question to ask you, all the scratch. Yeah, I'm talking about your buddy that you invited over to watch the game with you.
Yeah. And we duked it out and fell on the coffee table and spit beer and chips and salsa and rolled around. And then we hugged each other and drank some more beer.
Now, was he the guy that you put in the sleeper hold?
Yeah, made him say Roll Tide. I love to do that to Dale.
I'm trying to remember, which game were you watching? Was that the Iron Bowl?
Oregon and Auburn.
Oregon and Auburn. So you invited the guy over for the game. You got into a scrape. What did he say to you?
What I said when Oregon intercepted the ball, I said, what, go Duck? And he said, shut your mouth, S-O-V. And I said, what? And he said, you heard what I said. And I jumped up and he pushed me and then it was on. And then it was something. He's a pretty stout dude. He's about 15 years younger than me, but we loved each other, man.
So when you got him, Larry, you got him in a sleeper hold, right?
Yeah, my favorite hold.
Okay,
well, lock my legs around your waist and get you in that. My arms around your neck, and you ain't going nowhere, brother.
You told him to say Roll Tide.
Yeah, he went, Roll Tide. He had no choice. He was going down, brother.
Okay, so did you let him out after that?
Yeah, I didn't want him to put him to sleep. That's dangerous.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
But
you roll, brother, and these people claiming Alabama fans, I'm not learning these psychological help. Well, hell yeah, join the crowd, Jack. We all do.
Now,
not getting incoming. So, hell, you know what? Get over it, Jack. Thank you, Paul. Roll Tide.
I just want to know if the guy, I guess the guy watched the end of the game, didn't he? Can you imagine? Sounds like that guy, the other guy, probably needed a good lawyer. Augie is next.
I don't know if he needs a good lawyer or a good, like, social worker or rehab guy. But, you know, Larry's okay. Larry's a good dude. I have no issue with Larry. But, Paul, that guy Phil who called you, didn't he know we killed off Nick Saban like four or five times this offseason? Where has he been? Has he not been listening to the show? we've already declared Nick Saban dead and his dynasty gone. So that's no news there. But you see, did seem to relish in being able to say you can't compare Saban to the Bear. That was very insightful.
Well, thank you.
Very insightful. No, insightful to us about your psyche towards Saban. But you just said something about Bear Bryant that, and I'm not a Bear Bryant historian, unlike you. Mm-hmm. You said, well, I'm not going to tell salacious stories. Are there salacious stories to be told about Bear Bryant? Not his drinking, not his associating with certain people, but are there the really prurient stories that we might want to know?
I suspect there are, yes.
It sounded like you knew of some.
Well, it's one thing to, I mean, you do over a career, most of it in a state that worship Bear Bryant, you eventually run into pretty much everyone who played and coached for him, yes.
So,
and
okay,
occasionally, not always, but occasionally you would see them late at night at a bar or a dinner, and, you know, 3-4 drinks into the night, they started telling some stories.
In vino veritas, right?
Yeah,
interesting.
Exactly.
Well, I did not know that.
But the one thing I've never done with any of those stories is tell anyone, because I think even today, 41 years after his death, I think that would be dangerous.
I think so too. What do you think the time's right for those stories to come out? Another 4 years?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure you know some people that know some great stories about Carlos Marcello. Do you go around telling those stories?
Well, you know, the mob in New Orleans isn't what it used to be.
Yeah, but there's still some guy somewhere.
Maybe we need the mob back, considering the state of New Orleans.
You know, I would argue, Augie, that when Carlo ran the town, it was a much better town.
It was a much better town with Carlos running it. But, hey, Paul, you said that Augie was the definition of smugness. Remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm the definition of smugness, who is the definition of the most pompous caller?
Well, there would be some competition for that. I would say Jeff from Ohio would be in on the short list, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, Jeff would be okay. But there are a couple of other categories.
Who else would you nominate?
I'm not as an expert as you. You're here every day listening to people. What about the most self-aggrandized caller? Who do you think that is?
Oh, I don't know. Would you like to help me with this one, Augie?
No. It's you, Paul. You're the host. They want to hear from you. What about
this? The host's job isn't to insult his callers. That's what callers do.
You're trying to get some kind of phoner interaction going.
No, I just figured that you would not be shy about telling that story.
I'm not, but I want to hear from you. Okay, what about this one? Your most philosophical caller.
By the way, what was that question again?
The most philosophical caller. Who would that be?
Philosophical. That would be I-Man.
Yep. I-Man? Well, that's true. He could probably be throwing in on that. But pompous, self-aggrandizing, your Larry King caller. Who would your Larry King caller be? The guy who could sit in for Larry King and hold an interview. Who would you put
in
that category?
That would be Jim from Tuscaloosa.
You think that would be Jim?
I mean, Jim.
Where would you put John from Louisville?
Oh well, no. I mean, you're comparing John to Larry King.
Well, I'm not saying he would fit in that category, but of any category, where would you put John?
I find John to be very conversational.
Well, that's Larry King-ish.
Yeah, Larry was the king of schmooze. I would agree. I did his show once, and I will say at the end of the hour, I was far more impressed with him than I had ever been before.
Wow. I didn't realize you did Larry King.
Mm-hmm.
You got to play that clip one day on the show. You got
to
get.
It wasn't that long. It was about 15 years ago. I'll tell the story some other time, but we have to go to a break. We have Michael Katz waiting from Ole Miss. Well, not from Ole Miss, from Oxford. He works at Ole Miss.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Feeling like you need a marketing degree and an extra day in your week to successfully market your small business? Let Constant Contact do the heavy lifting for you. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has powerful tools that make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more to boost your business. Now, in just a few clicks, you can launch a marketing campaign that's tailored to your business and goals. That includes email, social, SMS, and more. So you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track your business growth. Plus, you can always count on Constant Contact's award-winning customer support for guidance along the way. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
And we are back, and always great to catch up with Michael Katz, who writes for the Northeast Mississippi Daily, covering the Ole Miss Rebels. Michael, thank you for dropping in. What's going on with you?
Not much, pal. How are you doing?
We're doing okay. We're making that turn toward the season, and some programs have big quarterback rooms when you're not really sure if any of the four or five can play. Ole Miss is the antithesis of that. What's going on there?
Yeah, it just keeps getting bigger, too, sometimes unexpectedly. This past weekend, obviously, there was some news with a player reclassifying the class of 23, and he's going to be here this summer. You add that to a room that already had Jackson Dart, who was the starter last year. Spencer Sanders came in from Oklahoma State. And then you brought in Walker Howard from LSU. You've got a lot of guys who they feel really good about. Lane Kiffin has constantly said, the whole goal is to get the best position groups that you can at every spot. And they feel really good about the quarterback room. And I know it's going to be a debate up until, that first game against Mercer and maybe after that, too. It's hard to know what the timeline is going to be. But I think they're in really good shape, especially compared to where they were last year depth-wise.
I mean, fans all have their favorite, and certainly Dart is the incumbent. Not that that really matters in Lane Kiffin's playbook. How does he figure this thing out? How does he determine one in time? You mentioned Mercer. That's not a game that will probably matter a whole lot, but the second week of the season does matter.
Yeah, that Tulane game is looking pretty challenging. You know, last year they had another quarterback competition between Jackson and Luke Altmyer, and they had, you know, really six or seven games to kind of ease into it. They don't get that luxury this year. It's you get Mercer, and then it really kind of all starts rolling a little bit. And so, I hate using the it's a good problem to have, but Jackson looked really, really good this spring. The talk was that he turned the ball over once during spring practice and the Grove Bowl. That was a little bit of an issue for him last year, especially, when it rained, it poured with Jackson a little bit. And you could tell there were some times where it just sort of compounded a little bit. But he looks a lot more comfortable. He looks bigger and stronger. And I think there's this idea that he wasn't good last year. He was pretty solid. I think he was like the fifth rated quarterback in the SEC. I know a lot gets made of his age. He was 19. He was just turning 19 during the season last year. You know, he played as a true freshman in the air raid at USC. I think it was a really big transition for him. And so I think there's natural growth to be expected. If you look at Lane Kiffin's history, quarterbacks in their second year under him get incredibly, their numbers just soar. Going back to his time at USC with Matt Barkley, for his first year under Lane, he threw 26 touchdowns. The next year, it was 39. You look at FAU, Robeson was one of his quarterbacks. He doubled his touchdowns the second year. And then you look at Matt Corral, who was kind of a turnover machine a little bit his first year under Lane. And that second year, he was about as good caretaker of the ball as possible. And so I think if you're looking at just expected growth, Jackson's going to be pretty good. And I think that the bringing in guys like Spencer Sanders, who was a first-team All-Big 12 guy, he can obviously play. And a guy like Walker Howard, who was a four-star recruit coming out of high school, I think it just I think it's – I don't want to say it's put an edge on Jackson, but I do think it has I think it's helped him. I think there's two ways you can go. You can either sulk or you can take the challenge. And Jackson, by all accounts – has taken the challenge. I've always been on the side that that Jackson was going to be. I think he's going to end up being the guy. Of course, there's a lot of things to happen between now and then. But just from everything we've seen and what we've heard, I think it's going to be pretty hard for him not to be the guy long term next year.
Michael, interesting situation on the defense. You have Pete Golden leaves Alabama. Fans rejoice. I mean, they're still rejoicing. Meanwhile, in Oxford, fans feel like they picked up a really good coach. Can you explain that to the rest of us or help solve that puzzle?
Yeah, it is funny. The tweets when that all happened were very, very different from all sides. Like you said, it was Alabama fans sort of praising the good Lord, and it was Ole Miss fans really excited about what they had. I think where Ole Miss is at is they know what they are going to get from the offense on a pretty consistent basis. Yeah, it's going to look a little bit different year to year. But they're going to put up numbers for the most part. That's not the problem. The problem has been, can the defense be good enough? And it was a couple years ago when DJ Durkin, who's now at Texas A&M, was the guy calling the plays. That was a defense that was, it was good enough. Was it great? No. But it got the job done. And I think there's this idea that you feel good about your odds that Pete Golding is going to be able to get you there and maybe do better than that. And he's a really good recruiter. They've gotten some really nice pickups in the last few weeks with him on the recruiting trail. I don't know if there's an expectation that this is going to be, a top five defense. I'm sure they would love it to be, but it doesn't happen overnight. And part of that is the players you have. But they've done a nice job of using the transfer portal. They've got some really nice recruits coming in over the next couple of years. And I don't know if the expectation is that this is going to be one of his, top 10 Alabama defenses. I think the expectation is that it's going to be better than it was last year. And if it's better than it was last year, this team's probably going to be pretty good.
Let's talk about what's going to happen. Expectations are good, maybe not that high, considering you already have Alabama, LSU from that division. What are you looking at, and where is the range between one and what?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a little bit. I'm just looking through the schedule. They've got this run of four games in there where it's LSU, Alabama, LSU, Arkansas, and Auburn. There's a bye week in there too, and then you get Georgia towards the end, and then you get the Egg Bowl, which is always it's always something with that game. And so I think this team is going to be significantly better than it was last year. I just don't know if the win-loss record is going to show that. I think the offense, whoever the quarterback is, it's going to be better. They're going to run the ball well. The offense is going to be fine. And the defense, I feel pretty confident, is going to take steps forward under Golding. It might not always be pretty, but I think it's probably going to be prettier towards the end of the year than it was last year, when there was some bleeding in that defense, especially in the run defense. So I think that's all going to look better, but it might not look that way when you see the final win-loss record. I think if this team went 9-3 or 10-2, they'd be ecstatic. I think realistically, if this team went 8-4, I think it'd be a really, really good coaching job, just because this schedule is just so brutal.
Yeah, and for those who don't really understand what's under that schedule, I don't know why anybody wouldn't. You're talking about three schools easily in the top six or seven in the country on the Ole Miss schedule. And if you want to find fault with Lane Kiffin, it's not easy to find much fault. It's his inability to pull those type of upsets, Michael. And at some point, fans are going to expect him to do so. I'm not putting pressure. He just got a brand new $10 million contract, but it would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, last year, that Alabama game, they were just so close. I mean, that was a couple of plays towards the end where he almost had that signature moment. And then everything after that just kind of went crazy, as you remember, with everything happening with the Auburn speculation. And then that was just a whole ordeal. And obviously, he ended up getting a new contract. But, you know, I think that there's stability with the program. But like you said, they are really still looking for that signature win. You know, the win against Texas A&M here a couple of years ago, that was a nice win, but I don't know if it aged as well as they would have liked it, because A&M didn't end that season particularly great. And so, you know, the LSU game last year on the road, they were right there, and then the turnover problem happened with Jackson, and it all just sort of avalanched. Last year, they have Alabama right there. They're inside the five or whatever it was, and they can't get it done. And so, I do think that, you know, if you add that with everything that happened with the speculation of Auburn and all that, you know, sort of talk, I think people are starting to expect more. I think it's a good thing for Ole Miss that people expect these sorts of wins to start coming, because, you know, when Lane got here, the program was not in really a capacity to be winning those sorts of games those last couple years under Matt Luke. And so, the expectations have risen, and I think the expectations with Lane have risen. But yeah, no, I agree. I think that signature win is still somewhere out there, and the schedule is going to have a lot of opportunities for it. It's just a matter of, is this going to be the team to do it?
In fairness, as we close down, Mike, you know, beating Kentucky, that was a top 10 win. The only problem was Kentucky was a disaster after that win, and it faded into oblivion. Michael Katz, thank you very, very much for joining us. We've had a busy show with guests. We have one more. We're heading to Omaha in the final hour. If you just have put the show on, Florida has punched a ticket to the College World Series finals. That's a 2 out of 3 beginning this weekend. LSU will try to inch closer tonight.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
We are back in 11 o'clock tonight. We'll help set you up for the weekend with the College World Series. We'll find out whether LSU will play another day to try to punch a ticket or not later today. Jim is up next.
You know, Paul, as much as I was involved in baseball until I was almost 17 and then I got tragically injured, I now have no interest whatsoever in any kind of baseball. Isn't that interesting to you? I don't. It's interesting. I just have no interest. It's such a boring game to watch. I'm sorry. It is. It really is, Paul.
Well, I wasn't much of an athlete compared to you, but it was my favorite game until probably late teens.
Mine too. But when I became 30 years old and saw how bad the major leagues had gone downhill in so many ways, I said, the hell with this. And I had a good friend that was just literally practically worshipped baseball from the time he was 3 or 4 years old till he got, you know, 35 or 40. And then he called me one day and said, I can't stand this baseball stuff anymore. I just can't stay. Neither one of us watched it. And I wouldn't watch a game. You'd have to pay me to watch a game. What I call it about, though, Paul, I've got a title for you. I think it's perfect. I don't know if you do or not. The Southern Yankee, Paul Feinbaum. What do you think?
The Southern Yankee. And I need to ask what that means.
Well, you got a lot of New York stuff in you. Mm-hmm. You like to go to New York. You like to talk about your New York friends, Joe Scarborough, and Mika and those kind of people. You follow them all and they follow you. So I mean, but you're a Southerner. You're a two-sided guy, you know. But that's not what I call about. But anyway,
I don't need to tell you my backstory because you know it. But I mean, could be a reason why growing up in the South, but with a New York influence, maybe some of that rubbed off on me. I'm sure you're.
Well, certainly, I understand that. I'm not complaining. I'm not criticizing. I'm just telling you. I think you should be called the Southern Yankee.
Southern Yankee.
Here's what I call about, Paul. You finally hit.
I resent that you use Joe Scarborough against me.
He's one of the most horrible people on earth, in my opinion. I firmly mean that. But I'm not going to that. Let's don't step on my great call coming up. It's coming up. You know, that was very, very interesting. You and Augustine from New Orleans. Augustine, the paralegal. Y'all, and that's what he's good at. He's a smart guy. You're a smart guy. I'm a smart guy. And I recognize that's the kind of call that intrigues and interests the people that have got any sapience in their brain, which I know very few on this show that call this show have any. But you and I have, and Augustine has a lot of sapience. And I think he's overwhelmed me with the amount of sapience he's got from the last four months. Since early January, when he started talking about Mike Leach, and we finally got on the same page, and people predicted that could never happen between me and I, man. You said so, but it happened, and we even talk now almost every day. He gives me recipes for food. Guy's a sharp guy. He really is. His sharpness was well hidden from me for 10 or 15 years, but I'm not insulting him. But here's what I'm getting at, Paul. The intrigue to me was, I don't know if you've noticed.